Well, today is January 2nd, so that means life can get back to normal. So on the count of three, I think it would be a good exercise for all of us to take a collective sigh. I didn't count to three yet. On the count of three. One, two, three. We have had a busy month or so, at least in my family. I assume most of you have as well. We have been going nonstop from recitals to plays to caroling, shopping, Christmas party, gift exchange, one thing after another after another. But now, all the presents have been opened. I've seen trees out on the side of the road ready for recycling. New Year's has come, and I don't want to say New Year's has gone, it is the new year. And now we have a chance just to relax a little bit. But often during this time of year, we hear of a thing called the post-Christmas blues. Does anybody know what this is? Have you experienced this? This is how you get all wound up and all excited, all full of anticipation of what will come over the months and the weeks of Christmas, only to be disappointed when it's all over because life is a little bit slower. Now, perhaps nobody here has more reason to be blue this Christmas, this post-Christmas time, than I myself do. And I'll tell you why that is. I have had a very busy last couple weeks, full of exciting adventures and trips afar. I have gone to such exciting places as Sterling, Ohio. And after my trip, And after my 5 days in Sterling, Ohio, I was able to jump onto an airliner and fly halfway across the country to Shickley, Nebraska. So after all of these exciting trips and adventures to these great metropolises of the Midwest, I can feel a little let down now that it's all over. Now, both of these cities have much to boast about. Both of them can say that they are home to more cows than people. Not many cities can say that, in at least not in this area of the world. And also, the weather in Shickley was just so amazing. It's almost disappointing to come back to 60 degrees yesterday. On Friday, as I was working on my sermon, I checked the weather here in Stanton, Virginia, and you were enjoying another 60-degree day. Well, Shickley, Nebraska, where I was enjoying a beautiful day with a crisp temperature of 12. That is Fahrenheit. So why would I go to these exciting places like Sterling, Ohio and Shickley, Nebraska when there's no skiing and there's no beaches and there's nothing really exciting? There's not great nightlife. There's not shopping to be done. There's no great restaurants. There's not any restaurants. Why would I go to these places? Why spend time and money to go zigzagging across the country to these places that most people have never heard of? Well, I'm going to tell you something, and this is my point for the day. You'll get it early. Keep it in mind. We are drawn because of the people. I would have absolutely no reason at all to go to these places, to Sterling, Ohio, or Shickley, Nebraska, if it wasn't for the beautiful people that I find in those places. These are loving, caring people. People that I want to spend time with. People that I want to share memories with. I want more of what I get in these two places. And that's why I come back year after year after year. Our first text for this morning came from the prophet Isaiah. And we are in the latter part of Isaiah, so this is post-exile period of Isaiah. The Jews have returned to the promised land, and these Jews are living in Jerusalem once again. So Isaiah approaches these Jewish people, and he gives them this prophecy. And he says that they will be a light unto all of the world. All nations will see this light, and they will be drawn to them like a moth is drawn to a flame. Kings will come, rulers will come, leaders will come. All nations will see this light, and they will be drawn to Israel. Now, this sounds like quite a prophecy. But to be honest, this isn't anything new to the Jewish people. This is something that they've been hearing about for almost 1,000 years at this time. Because this is really quite similar to the prophecy, or actually the promise, that was given to Abraham when he was called to leave his family and his home behind and to travel to a place that God would show him. God promised Abraham that if he left his place behind, that God would make Abraham's family a blessing, and that through Abraham's offspring, all nations would be blessed, and that all nations would come to know the power, the majesty, the grace, and the love of our Creator God. So this prophecy that was given by Isaiah really wasn't shocking to the Jewish people. They always knew that they were called to be God's chosen people. God had a job for them to do, and they were to be a conduit through which God would enact His plan for the reconciliation of all things. That's something to get excited about, people. Show a little life here. I know, it's that post-Christmas blues. I'm going to say it again and act like you're excited about this, okay? The Jewish people knew that they were to be the conduit through which God would enact His plan for the reconciliation of all things. Is that something to get excited about? I'll take it, though. I'll take it. So we take this promise and we fast forward 500 years to the birth of Jesus. And we find in Matthew's gospel that there were a group of men that were doing whatever they do. I'm not sure what they did with their spare time. But they were observing the stars, and they see something. And we're not exactly sure what happened, but they see something that leads them to believe that there has been born a king to the Jews. Again, I don't know how they get that from the stars. I'm not sure how you look to the sky and see something different and say, oh, hey, must be a king born to the Jews today. But they do. They see this. So being the wise men that they are, they decide to go to where the king of the Jews should be born, right? They pack up their camels and they load their stuff into duffel bags and they head to Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem is an exciting place. Jerusalem is where things are happening. Jerusalem is the place where the temple is. The temple is full of beautiful, beautiful things that help the Jews to engage in worship. It's full of beautiful vestments and wall hangings. It has the Ark of the Covenant. It has copies of the Torah where people sit around all day and just talk about these things. Jerusalem was the epicenter of Judaism in the first century. So if something was going to happen within Judaism, it was going to happen in Jerusalem, this big metropolis of about 80,000 people. So the wise men, after they see whatever they see, the star in the sky, they travel to Jerusalem to meet the king of the Jews. The problem is, they went to the wrong place. The king of the Jews was not born in Jerusalem. So again, being the wise men that they are, they go to ask the current king, where is the one who is born king of the Jews to be found? And the king, being the intelligent and learned individual that he was, didn't know anything about it. So he goes to the wise scholars of his days and he asks them, and they say that indeed the one who is called the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. I'm sure that the wise men, the Magi, probably heard him say Bethlehem and they said, where's that? Bethlehem was this little podunk town about 5 miles south of Jerusalem. And as the song that we sang earlier says, there was only about 1,000 people in the city of Bethlehem. There was nothing exciting about this town. It didn't have a temple. It didn't have a lot of learned people sitting around discussing the Torah. It didn't have much of anything going on. The only thing that Bethlehem had to boast about was that it was the hometown of King David. But even he left. Oh, little town of Bethlehem. What's exciting about that city? What would draw three wise men, three kings, three magi to this place? They were drawn by a person, Jesus Christ. Now we need to better understand these magi a little bit more before we move on. And I need to say that these guys were probably coming from Persia. And they were probably not worshipers of the God that we worship. They would have likely been astrologers. And we need to differentiate real quick between astronomy and astrology. Astronomy is the study of the stars and all the celestial bodies, like the sun, the earth, the moons, the various planets. And we see a lot of astronomy today whenever we see places like planetariums where they study the movement of the stars. The people that were able to predict the lunar eclipse a couple weeks ago, those are astronomers. An astrologer is someone that looks to the stars, to the skies, to try to predict the future. And oftentimes, like these guys were assumed to be, they were worshipers of the sun, the moon, and the stars. So these three people, or however many there were, they were not Jews. But yet they are drawn from afar to come to a little town of Bethlehem with nothing exciting, nothing to draw them there, except for one thing, and that was Jesus. Again, that first line that I showed you, it is the people that draw us to these places. Like Shickley, Nebraska, and Sterling, Ohio, it is the people that drew the wise men to Bethlehem. Now, when I read these two scriptures one after another, I believe that the wise men visiting the young baby Jesus is a fulfillment of the prophecy that Isaiah gave. We can read through this scripture and we can see these different connections of how they brought these gifts and how it talks about kings coming. And we often call the Magi the three kings. So I believe that all nations did come to the city and they did worship God that day. But just because this is a fulfillment of that prophecy and it's also a fulfillment of the promise given to Abraham, I don't believe that just because it's a fulfillment, that means that it is concluded. Just because this event fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah and the promise given to Abraham doesn't mean that it concluded the prophecy and the promise. This, I believe, is an ongoing prophecy, an ongoing promise. And this prophecy, this promise that all people will be drawn to the one true God is continued in us. We are called to be disciples of Jesus, right? We are called to follow Jesus every day. We don't one day decide we're not going to be a Christian today. We are called to be a follower of Jesus in everything we do, in our mind, body, and soul. Every ounce of our being is to be dedicated to conforming to the image of Christ. And not only are we to be disciples of Jesus Christ, we are to make other people into disciples of Jesus Christ. We are to be disciples who make disciples, who make disciples, who make disciples. It's supposed to be this ongoing effect. We help other people as they seek to follow Jesus Christ. But the question that is so difficult, and many people debate the answer to this, the question is, how do we make other disciples? I'm going to take a little bit of a tangent here and just tell you a little bit about myself. I like to debate. If there's an argument to be made, I will make it. And sometimes I will argue something that I don't really believe just for the sake of an argument. Is there anybody here that likes to debate? No, you don't. No, you don't. Anybody else? No, you don't. Is there anybody that does like to debate? Oh, you're not going to raise your hand now. You see what I just did there? I debated you, and I won. I like to do research. I like to study. I like to learn about important things so that I can have an intelligent conversation. I like to talk about things that are important to me, things that are important to you, things that aren't relevant to either of us, just for the sake of conversation. But I would say that debating someone has never really changed somebody's worldview on something as important as Christianity. When I was in college, there was this religious leader, and he was challenged by somebody on the campus to a debate about the existence of God. He was challenged by an atheist professor on campus. And this guy was a little bit afraid, so instead of accepting this challenge to debate himself, he went to a friend of his who was more learned and educated than he was, had a PhD in something, I don't remember what it was. But this was a very intelligent man who had written many books on the subjects related to Christianity. I didn't attend this debate, it was held publicly, but some of my friends did, and they just said that this Christian guy, he wiped the floor with this atheist. You know, he came in pretty much knowing what the atheist would say. He understood the arguments that the atheist would make, and he had prepared some questions in response and some questions to rebuke what the atheist had said. And my friends that witnessed this shellacking thought it was the most funniest thing they had ever seen. They're like, man, Dr. So-and-so just wiped the floor with this atheist guy. And I wish I would have asked them at that time. But in hindsight, as I think about it, I wish I could have just said, well, did that guy become a Christian? Because I'm sure the answer is no. There's an old saying that you can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. Now, I've never been in the fly-catching business. I don't know if this is true, but I think it makes sense. If you want to attract something, if you want to draw it to you, if you want to capture it, you want something that it likes. You want something that's beautiful, that's attractive, that's good. Now, I don't believe that we as Christians are to set out to capture non-Christians. But Jesus did call us to be fishers of men and women. So how can we draw people in? How can we be sweet? How can we be appealing to them without compromising our beliefs? Well, I believe that nothing that I've ever witnessed is more beautiful, more attractive than a life fully submitted to Jesus. A life living in the love and experiencing that love and sharing that love with others. If we want to draw other people to Christ, we ourselves must be like Christ. I'll share this quickly. My experience this last week as I was in Shickley, Nebraska, that huge metropolis out in the Midwest, I got to spend time with my mother-in-law. And I don't have a lot of conversation with her normally. We don't just chat on the phone. If you do speak with your mother-in-law frequently, good for you. It's been a while since I talked with her. But I heard her tell stories about her work in La Puente in Colorado. What she and my father-in-law are doing right now is they are spending the next 3 years working in a very impoverished area of Colorado to help alleviate some of that poverty. I've shared this story a little before, so I won't get into it too much now. But they have dedicated at least 3 years of their life to making next to nothing in money to help other people. And the truth is, sometimes those people don't appreciate their work as much as they should. She told a story this week about this guy that was trying to shop at the food bank there, where he could get a certain amount of food for free. And he came up a number of times with something that he shouldn't have. He wasn't allowed to have access to this certain, I think it was a large ham or maybe a pot roast for this one individual. And I'm not exactly sure how it's set up, but one guy doesn't get a full, like, 10-pound ham. That's the way it's set up. That's the rules. So the guy comes first with the ham, and my mother-in-law says, no, you can't have that. He comes back with the pot roast and she says, no, I'm sorry, again, you can't have that. And he said to her, well, what good are you anyways? Very appreciative. He had a cart full of other food, but he wanted the ham. And somebody asked my mother-in-law, why do you put up with this? Why are you here? Why did you give up your job in Ohio as a teacher where you were making a good living? And that for her was an opportunity to share. She says, I believe in a God that calls us to serve others, to love others, to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and offer a glass of cold water in the name of Jesus Christ. She has these opportunities to share the love of Christ through her actions and through her words. And I believe that those are the kind of things that will draw people to Christ. I need to tie things up, but I want to say as I close, Isaiah 60 verse 3 says, "Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn." Please notice in that verse, it doesn't say nations will be drawn to God's light and kings to the brightness of your dawn, or to God's dawn. It says your light, your dawn. Now, I myself, I personally don't think I have light. But if I have God within me, I should. If I am living a life fully submitted to the ways of Christ, if I am following Him daily in my life, if I am a true disciple, people should be able to see this light within me. I should take God's light and make it my own. And it will draw people to Christ. It will draw them to ask you questions. It will draw them to know God. So what could have made me over this holiday season travel afar to places like Sterling, Ohio, and Chicoutimi, Nebraska? I was drawn by the people. What drew the wise men, not to the epicenter of first century Judaism in Jerusalem, but instead to a little town known as Bethlehem? They were drawn by a person. And what will draw people to Jesus Christ today? They will be drawn by you and me, showing the love of Christ through our lives.